I would like to introduce to you my friend, Keith. As far as I can tell from hearing the stories, he originated Secular AA in Las Vegas many years ago. And so this session is about kind of the history of Vegas recovery, anything he wants to talk about. And when he's done saying what he wants to talk about, I'm going to ask some questions because there's some interesting things that I think people would like to know that I doubt he's going to talk about. But don't worry, it's nothing personal. But anyway, yeah. So, Keith, why don't you share? Give us your spiel, man. Tell us what you want us to hear about Vegas recovery and the history of it, and anything else you've got to share with us, please.
Hey, thanks, Kurt. Hi, my name is Keith, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm in the habit now of when I attend what I call a mainstream AA meeting that I'm attending for the first time, and mainstream includes anything but secular meetings, I guess, in my mindset. So I always introduce myself and by saying, "Hi, I'm Keith, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm what the 12 and 12 refers to as the belligerent one." And then I proceed to drop my atheist. I consider myself an atheist. Sobriety bomb on the meeting, and describe, tell my journey, and how, and discuss how it's my belief that there should be more secular people in attendance in AA meetings, and that it's my opinion that I just do not think mainstream AA is very welcoming to people who are non-believers, I guess. Ironically, I did that last week, 2 weeks ago, at a meeting that I hadn't attended. And I said, I'm going to go back. I'll start in the beginning. So in 2002, in June, I entered the rooms of AA. And as many of us, if not all of us, experienced the whole God rhetoric, and they seemed to be... that was very prevalent in the program. And I wondered if there was a place for me in those rooms. And it was hard for me. And people in the meetings would say, you know, just give it time, be open-minded, and it'll come in time. And I knew it wouldn't. There was no way that I could believe in what someone just referred to as the big daddy in the sky. There's no way that I would be, it was just, I guess, intellectually and intelligently beyond my grasp to accept something divine that was controlling everything. I'm definitely come from more science based. Anyway, so I struggled in the program. There was a banner literally in the room, my original home group, that said, "You are not alone." And I would stare at that banner and feel like I was alone. I didn't drink for 18 months. During my 90 meetings in 90 days, I would say to my sponsor at the time, I said, "I go into meetings and I feel fine, and I leave and I want to drink." I said, "That's not how it's supposed to be, is it?" And he said, "No." And at one of the meetings that I was doing my 90 and 90, someone literally said that they met their sponsor at their first meeting, and their sponsor said, "If you can't find God, you might as well go out on the street and continue to drink." At the very next meeting there, I shared that I thought that was irresponsible for anybody to say to a newcomer. Two, that I thought it was irresponsible for anybody to repeat that in a meeting. And three, I thought it was irresponsible that nobody stated how irresponsible that all was. And then they threatened to kick me out of that meeting. So my first experience with AA, I didn't drink for 18 months. I went back out for 2 years, and then I came back in. And when I came back in, I decided to be more serious about it. Instead of approaching my 90 meetings in the 90 days like it was a sentence that I needed to be paroled from, I think my first 2 years, I went to a meeting every day for 2 years, and sometimes I went to five because I became a general service. There wasn't a sobriety requirement to be the recording secretary at our business meeting, so I took on that responsibility. That was 1 year. Then the general secretary of this room that ended up having I think 23 meetings a week. I volunteered for that, and I assumed that position for a year or 2 years, something like that. I can't remember. And then I became that meeting's GSR. And I'm grateful that that meeting allowed me that latitude or those liberties, because they knew that I was an atheist, and they still allowed me to represent them. It was an LGBTQRSTUV plus meeting. And I would speak when I was the GSR, I'd go to the area meetings. And at that time they were discussing the possibility of publishing a pamphlet or a booklet of people of other beliefs. And I would speak in support of that. And at the end of the area meetings, people would come up afterwards and say to me, you know what, you really don't belong here, or maybe you should try something else. And, but then again, people would come up to me and say, 20 years of sobriety, sober for 20 years, I'm an atheist, thank you so much for being here. So I guess it was, I don't know if it was out of necessity or need, but I ended up finding AA Agnostica, the website in New York, and realized that there are other, there's secular meetings in this country. And from that, I grasped, or I took the, I saw that they had meeting formats for secular meetings, and read the agnostic preamble, which my favorite saying, part of that is, you know, we're here because we don't want to force anybody to accept anybody else's beliefs or having to deny their own, which is what I felt was the rhetoric they were trying to advance in what I call the mainstream meetings. So in January 1st of 2010, if I'm not mistaken, we had our first secular meeting here. Prior to that, I made up flyers that today in retrospect, I think were very naive, because it, I believe it said it had the, I photoshopped the coexist icon for, to be inclusive of all beliefs and all religions, including non-ones, which, was naive in the way, because at one, some of our earlier meetings, a person would attend the meeting who believed in icons and who believed that statues spoke to you. And like they did in Greek and or Roman times. And he was confident of that. And the whole, and the, he, I'm guessing that he wasn't accepted at mainstream meetings, although his beliefs to me seem much more in line with theirs than with mine. In regard to that. So I put up the flyers and the pamphlets in other rooms, and people would tell me that they were, people were taking them down and removing them. So I papered the valley and all the rooms I knew, announcing that this meeting was going to start and it was going to form. And people would also notify me that people were at other meetings were, I'll say referencing the meetings and criticizing that I started the meetings, and they would defend me. And I said, you know, that's fine. I mean, I'm glad that somebody is talking, because if they sit there and criticizing the meetings, they're letting people know that they exist. And so there are times when I would sit in that meeting and I was the only one there. I was, I'd sit there by myself and look on the cell phone, and my sponsor told me that if you commit to chairing a meeting, it's an hour long commitment. You're there half an hour before, you're there an hour during, and you're there a half hour after. And he said, regardless if anybody shows up or not, you sit there for the entire hour, because somebody might show up at 45 minutes into the meeting and then they really need one. So I believe I have a pretty good background in the, what's it called, meeting etiquette. And I'm thankful for my sponsor, and he's since passed on, but for giving me that education. And I don't know how many years into it, I was sitting at the meeting, and I had been sitting, the only one sitting there for I don't know how long, and I was just going to give up the meeting and not go. And I realized that I hadn't announced that I was going to give up the meeting. So I drove to it And I was going to put up a flyer and call the powers that be, wherever the meeting was posted, that the meeting was canceled. And when I showed up that day, there was five, no, five, four, four, three or four people who had never attended the secular meeting and that were there to do it. And it's kind of never slowed down. I mean, it's slowed down, but it's been, varying degrees of attendance since then. And I just looked it up on my phone. I believe it was in 2013, or maybe it was 2012. We received a letter announcing that Santa Monica was going to have the first international secular convention. And I guess they got our name and our address off of AA Agnostica in New York. And I attended that meeting. And I saw several people there that had Vegas, as I'm sure everybody is aware, is a highly touristed destination. And we had a lot of guests at the meeting that would frequent it. And I ran into some people who I knew at the Santa Monica Convention. And I ran into two people who were residents who were unaware that there was a secular meeting that existed. And that's Bob, who's supposed to join Bob and his wife Jerry, who's supposed to join us later. I don't know if he's going to or not.
Bob is here. Bob is
Oh,
here.
is he? All right, I
Yeah.
don't see him on this thing. But anyway, so I guess that's basically all I have to say in regard to that. Surprisingly,
Well, you're
but
good.
yeah, it's before COVID. We had a meeting every day of the week here in Las Vegas that was a secular meeting. Sometimes we had two. And unfortunately, most of those meetings did not survive the pandemic. At one point, the meeting that I co-founded in 2010, we went virtual at times. We did it, I mean, during COVID, sometimes we would just have it at my house. We had hybrid meetings. I don't think that meeting ever missed a day since 2010, but January 2, but I could be mistaken. That's basically all I can think of at the moment.
Okay. Like I said, I'm gonna discuss something else, something more with you that you haven't thought of. I was right, you didn't discuss it. But let's hear from Bob. Maybe Bob has more now. I want to ask him to unmute.
Let's
Okay,
see.
Bob, give us what you wanted. Give us your spiel on the history of Las Vegas secular recovery and anything else you want to talk about within reason. I can't hear you, Bob. Okay, so you're unmuted, but your mic isn't working.
Yeah,
There
I'm
you
Bob.
go.
I'm an alcoholic. I'm also technically depraved on account of I'm technically deprived. I find that microphones work much better when you turn them on. Anyway, sorry I'm late. I was on the other meeting about writing the big book, and I saw the thing about the breakout room, and I didn't know how to do that, but I had to click around and click around, and finally I found it by accident. So I finally got on here. My wife unfortunately can't be here today. She had a previous engagement, and but she's the one that really got me into this secular slot here. And I've been sober for quite a while. In fact, this month, on the 27th of this month, I will be hitting the big 3-0. And of course, I had a belly button birthday earlier in June, and I got sober when I was 50. So that'll tell you what decade I'm in now. For the first, 11 years or so of my sobriety, and I had met my wife when I was about a year sober, and in AA, and we were both quite fine with the regular meetings that we were going to in Southern California. And basically, our home group was in Santa Monica, which is where we met, where she lived. I lived near there, and we were fine with those meetings, and we did that for a long time. And I really didn't know there was a secular growth. I knew there was a touch of that in AA, because one of the first meetings I went to was a we agnostics meeting. And I thought it was interesting and all, but I didn't. It didn't really draw me in. I was happy with my regular home group, and neither my wife nor I, neither one of us were still religious. We had both gone to Catholic grade school and high school, and had dropped out of that long, long ago. And so we were happy with the traditional AA on the west side of Los Angeles, and which is. I know it is a lot less religious-y than in other parts of the country. Anyway, so after we got married in 2002, and in 2003 we moved to Las Vegas, which was major change for both of us, and we got situated in a home group the first week we were here. It was wonderful. I mean, it was just this wonderful group. It became our social group. We went to all the parties they had. We after our Friday night meeting, we would go out to eat. And, it was just a wonderful social group that took us in and made us a part of it and made us feel secure and happy about living in a strange town like Las Vegas, And that went on, like I say, that went on for quite a while. And then in 2014, my wife met a young lady in a meeting who was just having a really hard time with the religiosity. And we did notice that there was more religiosity here in Las Vegas for some reason, Sin City. And we did notice that. And, in fact, I even was thinking of asking one person to be my sponsor at one time. My original sponsor here in Las Vegas was very non-religious-y. But after he left town, I was thinking of asking this guy to be my sponsor. And I, I loved the guy. I loved everything he talked about. But when we were having a conversation about sponsorship, about him being my sponsor, he started to trend on that religious side, and I just, I didn't end the conversation right there, but I never talked to him about it again. I just didn't want to go there. And we were happy with our home group and we had that wonderful social group here. And I would still stand up and hold hands and say the Lord's Prayer at the end of the meetings. It was not that, it wasn't that big a deal to me. I just considered it a chant and I enjoyed doing it with people, And in 2014, Jerry, my wife, met a young lady in a meeting who was just having a really hard time with the religiosity. She'd given her phone number and they start talking, and the woman said, "I just can't do that. I cannot be a part of that, And so Jerry said, "Well, let me look into this for you." And she started doing some research, and she found secular AA. And that happened to be the same year that the WAFDAC, the We Atheists, Agnostics, and Freethinkers International AA Convention, which I love that term, WAFDAC, was happening in Santa Monica, our hometown. And so Jerry got on that, and then she found the online secular meetings and stuff. But we went to that conference there, and that's where we met Keith, and found out that he had actually started a secular meeting already in Las Vegas. And we just enjoyed the heck out of that, and being back in our old hometown and meeting some of the old people that we had gone to meetings with before, like, several years earlier at that point. In fact, I met one young lady that I had been driving to and from meetings occasionally. She needed a ride because she didn't have a car, and she lived in an alley. She was an alcoholic and a heroin addict. And at that time she was living in an alley in Venice. And, I took her to meetings and stuff, and Jerry helped her too, but I was providing the transportation. And we met her at the WAFDAC in Santa Monica. And at that point she had been a substance abuse counselor for about 10 years. So she had gotten sober, stayed sober, and got a profession and helped other alcoholics, you know, AA wise and professionally. So that was just an amazing experience. That really did. But that whole WAFDIAC conference there, I think it was 3 days we were there. And of course, we got to see some of our old friends, not from AA there too, because we had both had our lives really dug into that part of town there. And so that was a fantastic experience. So when we came back here, back to Las Vegas, Jerry just jumped on the secular meeting idea, and she got in touch with central office, and she got two. Well, let's see. We got we started a meeting Monday night, and then I think we had one on. We started another meeting, which was not specifically AA, on Saturday, but I'm not sure about the timing of all that. Anyway, so we started a meeting, and our friend Wes, who I saw here earlier, came to one of our meetings, and a few times, but that inspired him to go start some meetings, and he started another couple of meetings in a different location. And then it just, you know, and then we knew about Keith. So we also went to Keith's and Keith's meeting and saw, you know, and suddenly it felt like we had this whole milieu of secular meetings going on. And, you know, we still went to some of the regular meetings, but that just kind of faded away. And then, of course, when COVID hit, that really kind of knocked the whole thing, you know, right out of the ballpark. And we just pretty much got limited to the secular online meetings. We kept our Saturday meeting going. It was very iffy for a while there. We for a while we tried to do it, you know, as a hybrid meeting, do it, have it online and in the room, in the meeting room, which is over on Las Vegas Strip. It's called the SOS, the Sobriety on the Strip Club there. And, you know, we managed to keep that going. I think there was a short time in there when we didn't have meetings, although I think somebody was, I don't know, somebody may have been leading those meetings for a few times. But anyway, it was the COVID and getting online and doing all the, you know, the Zoom meetings with people all over the world. That's the thing that really knocked me out about it, to be able to, you know, sit here and hear people from all over the world share. And just an amazing experience. And I was, well, that's, you know, that's one of the things that I found attractive about AA from the beginning, was that there were alcoholics and meetings all over. I went back to my hometown with my mother. This was not too long after I got sober. You know, was able to go to a meeting. That this is back in Michigan, in the Bellevue, Battle Creek, Michigan area, you know, and just find a meeting and go to it. And my wife and I went to Florida on some trips and you know, found some really interesting meetings there. And it's just, you know, that was the thing about it. It was all over. It was available to me, and I didn't have to break the pace too much, you know? So, now having these secular meetings, I mean, it's begun to wear on me a little bit. The Zoom meetings did, and we, like I say, we got the one meeting that we still do on Saturday morning at the SOS Club. We've kept that going, and you know, just yesterday we had people there from Seattle. This is a live meet, you know, in the room. We had people there from Seattle, from California, and a guy from New York, besides all the rest of us there, you know, and they found us. They went online and found that meeting. It was close to where they were staying. And I'm not sure if they were looking specifically for a secular meeting, but they all commented on how glad they were that they were able to find that meeting. And we had a great discussion. It was a great meeting there. So I'm really happy to be here today. It was difficult for me to arrange it. I was supposed to have another Zoom meeting at 10 o'clock and all this, and I had to cancel that. And then
Well,
I
we
couldn't figure out
appreciate it.
how to get on this meeting. But like I say, I'm technically depraved on account of technically deprived. I don't know. How much time have I taken up now?
Well, you know what? You might get another chance here in a minute, but you're good. And thank you for showing up.
Okay, well,
And
glad to
thank you
be
for
here, and I think
participating.
I'll stick around.
Yeah, all right. And I'm Kurt, and I am a godless member of AA. I'm experimenting with ways of introducing myself. If you were at this session I gave yesterday, you might know why. But anyway, and I also live in Las Vegas. I've lived here since 2019, so January of 2019. So a year after that is when the pandemic started, right? In March of 2020. And I was thinking, and as a someone who hadn't been in Las Vegas for very long, and I was still kind of dazzled by it, and I was living on Fremont Street, which is, but I wanted to reflect on what went through it. And I had, it was just after I found Keith's meeting and the meetings at the Camel Club, the secular meetings. And it wasn't long after that that, yeah, the pandemic came down and they closed everything down for a minute. And I was just thinking, I would think we sh well, I would like to pause and remember for a minute what a friggin' shock that was. I mean, if any of you've been to Vegas, I'm sure some of you have, and you've seen Las Vegas Strip, right? In the daytime, or especially at night, with all the lights and the people and the craziness and the guys handing those little cards out to you, and I mean, it's just a throng of people and lights and everything, and it went dark, man. It went dark for the first time ever. And that had a, that just looked that was profoundly affecting to me. That was like, wow, man. I took my bicycle, and I rode right up and down the middle of Las Vegas Boulevard, looking to the left and the right, and there was nothing but occasional security guy walking around, and there was nobody there, man. I mean, it and then all the meeting houses were closed, right? The club I went to was closed. It put a huge shock on a lot of people I know in recovery. I mean, looking back on it, I know there are people who never made it out of that. They didn't know about Zoom, or they just couldn't do Zoom. I prefer in-person meetings myself still, and I spent mostly go to non-secular meetings. But I was just thinking about that time, and then Keith and I interacted during that time because I knew him. We were friends, and Keith is a has been a roulette dealer in one of the biggest hotels in Vegas for many years. And if he would be willing to, I would like I know you went through a really hard time during that period, and I think everybody I would if I was just coming in here knowing Vegas just from being a tourist once in a while, I think it'd be super interesting to hear a little bit about how it was for you and what happened in that casino and how tough it was. I don't know if you were ever close. I don't think you were ever close to drinking or anything. But I know it was a tough time for all of us, and it was tough, especially for you. So, would you mind regaling us a little bit about what it was like? Because Vegas didn't stay closed very long, right? I mean, it was maybe a month or two or 6 weeks, and then we put on our masks and sprayed alcohol around and kept sinning, right? That's how I remember it. We just kept going. So, Keith, would you mind regaling us a little bit and how that affected you and what it was like in those big casinos for a sober gentleman, a secular sober gentleman, dealing roulette all that time? I think that'd be an
Sure.
interesting story.
So during COVID, actually, I happened to be in India. I left on February 28th or 29th, and I was supposed to spend the whole entire month of March of 2020 in India. 3 weeks into it, they kicked us out. It took me 7 flights and 86 hours to make it back, and I made it out less than 24 hours before they shut down all forms of transportation there, including local rail. I believe I. It was March 23rd, I think, when I made it back to Las Vegas, and like the hoarding had stopped. And my boyfriend at the time said, he goes, you should be grateful that you missed that because people were not acting on their best behavior. And then we opened up, I think the casino opened back up in June, the second week of June of 2020. Mask mandates were in place. There had not been a vaccine, and we the dealers and the floor supervisors were the ones, there's a mask mandate in place and we were the ones who were responsible for enforcing it. They had a security guard every now and then that would mention something, but it was primarily up for us to enforce that. And we had to do that and we were required to do that. And people did not want to comply, you know, and then I would tell them, you know, if you have your own personal agenda that you're trying to advance, this isn't the right place to do it. But that didn't matter. I'd already become very misanthropic because I've dealt with the general population or I've been in the service industry for most of my life, probably my entire adult life. And yeah, it was just not, people were not behaving at their best. I never considered going out and drinking during the time. Yeah, but I was not very fond of my fellow human beings. And still kind of, that residual is still there. And my plan now is leaving the country. I'm planning to move to Spain in a year, year and a half. I just got my tax ID number to do that. I will definitely attend meetings while I'm there. So that's another tangent. But yeah, it was not easy. And the casinos, they had a captive audience. They did not have a hard time bouncing back. One of our biggest money days was the 4th of July, 2021, I think, the weekend before or after the 4th of July. Yeah, so to my knowledge, the casinos were not hit hard because nobody had, you know, they couldn't travel across the pond or across bodies of water to go on vacation. We were one of the few games in town, as they say, and people, and we had I'm kind of afraid I'm going to tread on outside issue territories if I elaborate too much on that.
Well, this isn't really an AA meeting, you know.
Oh, it's not.
We can
So the demographic of people who are coming to town were not the ones who are concerned about the well-being of other people or even for that matter, believe, I was going to say an evolution of the facts that vaccines even work or exist. And
I remember you telling me it was a coarse clientele that hung in there. We got a whole new group of people that were, you know, it wasn't a nice crowd. Yeah, it just kept coming all through the pandemic. I remember you talking about it. They were very difficult people. There was a lot of, now that I'm thinking of it, there was this huge upshot in violence in the casinos, right?
There was
shootings. There was a bunch of knifings. There was all kinds. This was like some tough people coming up to Vegas. And so I know what you're talking about.
And the word got out the word got out that it was an environment where they could behave that way too. So people are continuing to come here and behave that way, to a lesser degree, but it was not easy and it still is not. And anyway, going back to secular AA, one of the things that I forgot to mention is when I came to these rooms, I kept thinking, you know, I didn't come here to get converted. You know, I came here for recovery. And if I did need that other stuff, I knew where to go. I was raised Catholic. But and when I started the meeting that was started, I didn't want it to religious bash. I didn't want it to necessarily talk about religion. I didn't, my vision of it was to focus on recovery. For a while there, we read from One Big Tent, which was finally approved, and that literature, and we read the whole entire book. And my problem with that is it talks about people's problems with how religious the AA program was. So we were kind of forced for the whole entire year, however long it took us to get through the book. And it seemed like every meeting it was talking about how the difficulties people had with that, and it seemed to be too focused on that, which was kind of the exact. Anyway, so we read through it once, and then we stopped, and then now we're on topic meetings again. After reading Living Sober, which I think is originally what the meeting started, the text that we read from, because it's the only secular conference approved literature in AA. And but ironically, most of the people who attend our meetings have a lot, like double digit sobriety. And you know, people say that you can't get sober in AA unless you find God or have a higher power. And our meetings are probably a testament that that is not true. And Living Sober is, it's a good reminder, but it's, for me, my opinion is that's based mostly for newcomers, some people who are early in sobriety. But anyway, I'm sorry for that tangent, and I know you wanted to focus on...
Oh, you're good. You're good. Thank that, you very much. It's all been interesting stuff and very, you know, but now I think it's time that we should open it up for everybody to share that they want to, So please raise your hands if you want to ask questions, share anything you want to do, you know, within reason. And I will remove the pins from you guys. Hang on. Just a minute. And I know who raised her hand first. It was Kathy Jo, so I'm going to call on her. Okay, Kathy Jo, go ahead.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you so much, Keith, and I can't, Tom or something, Bob, sorry. Anyway, yes, thank you for your presentation. I have been to Vegas, but I haven't been to an AA meeting in Vegas. And you know, truthfully, I stumbled on secular AA only because of COVID. I mean, it's kind of the gift that keeps on giving in some odd, bizarre way and keeps taking, is that I started to go to a lot of Zoom meetings. And, you know, as somebody kept referring to the word secular meetings, actually, I did not like the word secular, maybe because I didn't understand what the word meant. But I was really turned off by it. And sometimes when I talk about secular to other people, they get this look like, I don't really like that word. And I think it's because they don't understand what the word is. Like myself, I did not understand what the word is. And, you know, once I started going to the meetings, I felt like many people felt, and, you know, there are a lot of old timers that come to these meetings. I mean, people that have been around for a while and probably just searching, and they found their home. That's what I felt like for me. I found a home where I could voice my questioning or my own identity of spirituality, which frankly is my own. I'm very selfish about it. I don't want to give it to anybody else. It's my own. That's the way I feel about it. But it doesn't make it wrong or right. But at least I feel like I have the space to you know, to say that. And, you know, Keith, I appreciated that you talked about being in service in traditional AA, because that was the other thing that happened a few years for me ago. I started in an LGBTQ group. I was a GSR. I had like really no idea what a GSR was, but I wanted to be, you know, more of service. And I started to learn. And it was right at the time when AA is a fellowship of men and women wanted to be changed to people. Now, a little bit about that. Grapevine preamble is that it had been up for discussion for a couple years. There's review, discuss, and something else that they use. There's three terms that they use. But anyway, so for 2 years, it had been thrown down the road because nobody wanted to deal with it. But the third year, somebody called it out on the floor and said, we need to vote on this. And I talked a little bit about this yesterday. And that's when finally the change was made and the delegates, you know, understood that this is something that needs to change. And so AA as a fellowship of people is now what we have. So last year I was at Sobriety Under the Sun conference. And if anybody is going to Puerto Vallarta, please shoot me an email, because I go there every year, Sobriety Under the Sun, third week in January. There's a huge LGBTQ community, but it's pretty traditional. However, when I went to the large meeting, I always like to sit in the second row because I can hear better and focus. And the first row is for the speakers and whatnot. Anyway, well, there they are reading the preamble. There they go. A is a fellowship of men and women. I about lost my mind because this has been around for over 2 years. And I'm like, what is going on? And I was so upset about that, that I just totally lost focus of the speaker. It's like, we worked so hard to have that done. And I was so, I'm going to use the word pissed off. I just could not focus on anything. So I ended up leaving the meeting early in my 2-year-old tantrum. Like, who is that going to hurt except for me, right? But anyway, I'm walking out and the chairperson happened to be walking out the same time. And everybody was still in the meeting except for me and the chairperson. And I thought, don't say anything, Kathy Jo. Don't say anything. Don't say anything. Well, those of you who know me, which there's a couple in the room, know that that's just not me. And I politely went up and I said, I'm not sure if you're aware of this or not, but, you know, the preamble has changed. And she goes, they didn't read it right? And I said, no. And she said, oh my gosh. Well, the big picture of what happened is the sorority of their son had been closed for 2 years. They hadn't had the conference. And so therefore they hadn't changed the little laminate script, if you will. But, you know, I shouldn't have to be the one like to always say something, but you know, most of the time I am, I'm the one saying, I'm not sure if you're aware of this or not. And, so it was immediately changed. And then when I went to the LGBT group there, the same thing, it was the old laminate script. And I just told the guy, I said, hey, look, this has been changed. And he just looked at me and questioned me like, do you know what you're talking about? I go, yes, as a matter of fact, I do. I was very instrumental in that change. And then one of the guys in the room goes, yeah, dude, it says on here on Google that it changed to people. Anyway, so my point is that, you know, I find as I'm drawn to the secular meetings, the traditional meetings, I am so hypersensitive to the language of God and him and this and that. But I have to find within myself to continue to give voice, to educate and to be patient and kind and more patience about, you know, changing some language, some basic language that's going on in our traditional meetings. And so I feel like I'm at a crossroads because part of me just wants to give up. Like, I am so tired of it. And I'm so tired of being looked down upon and questioned. The only thing I have going for me is, you know what? I've got 43 years of sobriety. I sobered up when I was 18. And I am not afraid to play that card if I need to. You know, because I'm looked down upon. I'm looked at like, do you really know what you're talking about? Yeah, as a matter of fact, I do. Let's pull up a chair and talk about this. But I don't want to be that way. But I find myself being personally frustrated, you know, with what's going on. And so I'm at a crossroads and I feel very emotional about it. And this, you know, I have to say this conference has been really good for me because I've heard a lot of things and a lot of people's stories. And last night's LGBTQ story really hit home for me in a lot of ways because there are so many people hurting in these secular rooms. And we have to do something about that. I mean, they're hurting in traditional rooms. And then they come to, you know, the secular meetings and they're still hurting. And I think, how can I, as a person, help this, you know, how can I give support? And so that's really, you know, what's going on with me. And I just really appreciate, I appreciate you listening to me and your share. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you very much for sharing. It was very interesting. I agree with you so much. I mean, if we all scurry away into our own little secular meetings where we feel comfortable, we're leaving, you know, we're leaving this worldwide organization that should be for everybody. We're leaving it to them, I feel. So, and some of us can't handle it, those of us who can, I hope we stay going. We keep going to all the traditional meetings and we keep showing up and we keep giving voice to the fact that we're here, because there's so many of us that go for years and years and years, right, Keith? I mean, how many of us have had that experience? You know, we finally say something, and then there's five people who agreed with us that never said it, never said anything about it. So I agree with you. But, now I'm going to call on my friend William here. He was next in line. Go ahead, Will. William.
Well, I thought you guys forgot about me. Bill, an alcoholic. When I moved here, I went to the 51 Club. That's a suggestion of another person. And it was a traditional meeting. And I didn't hear about secular meetings until about a year into going to that place. And the first meeting I went to was Wes's meeting at the Camel Club. And I went there a lot, you know. And three times. I sat around the table. I always sat at the end of the table because, you know, I'm old. I got cataracts and stuff. So I have to deal with the light problem. So most of the people walked in the room. This is a walking shadow. I couldn't see their faces until they got close enough. But I sat around that table three times, and that table held 15 people the way it was set up. And three times I counted, there's over 300 years of sobriety around that table. And there was other people in the room. And the newcomer had five years. So it was pretty much a room full of stalactites. But anyway, you know, it kept us sober. And it's better than listening to the stuff I was listening to my entire sobriety, pretty much. So, yeah. Bob got me hooked up to Zoom. I thank him for that. And you know, it was an enjoyable afternoon. But I go to meetings all over the place now. One thing I noticed that when I moved here, my insurance went up because there were smog driving conditions for driving hazards. Because here, a stop sign and a signal is not even a good idea. Just people run through stuff like that. You have to drive defensively all the time. If you don't, somebody's going to crash into you. That's happened to me once already. But since I refer to it as a self-will run riot capital of the world. So the locals sometimes aren't all put together all that tight either. But yeah, the people from California, yeah, they bring up their kids, and their kids are the ones that got the guns, and they act out. But anyhow, I went to a closed meeting. It's supposed to be for Alcoholics Anonymous, Alcoholics Only, a meeting. And it never was, but I was the intergroup rep for that thing for a couple of years. And then the meeting just stopped. And I'm just kind of just running around. And I got sort of burned out just going to walk-in meetings. It was costing me money. You know, it cost me about $5 to spend $2 on the Seventh Tradition. Then I had to drive home. So, I don't know. Maybe that'll change. But, God, I had all kinds of stuff I was going to say. Like always, an old person forgets everything in the middle of a sentence.
You know, that's so, all right, Bill.
Yeah, I know. I'm probably talking too long anyway.
No, you're fine. But you need to come around. Yeah, I haven't been seeing you at the meetings lately where you can stretch out, man. You need to come
stretch out. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, the Laundry Club has got the best furniture in town. It's all so much better than the folding chairs, which stopped me from going to one meeting. I couldn't take them anymore.
Well, thank you, Bill. And I'm going to call on Nell Z.
Hi, I'm Nell. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Nell.
Thank you guys so much. It's great to be here. Keith, I really related to what you said about seeing the banner of you're not alone in the meetings and then feeling like I am absolutely alone, right? When I got sober, I definitely felt like the odd man out because of my lack of, you know, religious leanings. But then when I had about 90 days, I started to feel like pretty confident, like, okay, I got this, you know, and I don't need to keep coming around all this God stuff anymore. And right around that is when I discovered the secular meetings. And then it was like, you know, I didn't have my excuse anymore of why I needed to go back out. Like, oh, okay, well, if this is here, then I guess I can stay. And I moved to Monterey and there were no secular meetings there. So I thought, oh, I'll just start one, right? How hard can it be, you know, starting a AA meeting, no big deal. And that's correct. Starting an AA meeting is no big deal. But depending on where you are, starting a secular meeting in AA is a huge deal if intergroup won't list you on the schedule. And that's what happened. And it took us a year of like going to the intergroup meetings, meeting with the steering committee, like, you know, explaining that we were AA, explaining that we were in keeping with the traditions, you know, quoting Bill Wilson, all this stuff. And it was pretty aggravating. And we got shut down, or, you know, like shot down a bunch of times. And I felt like at one point, like, and I only had about a year sobriety at the time. So it was like, it was pretty hard. It was pretty rough. I felt like, okay, you know, maybe I need to figure out like some other place that I can go to get my continued recovery. Like there are other recovery groups that aren't as religious as AA, but eventually they did put us on the schedule. And the problem was never getting people to come. Actually, people came, you know, word spread. So there was very clearly a need for that meeting. And I found myself eventually moving to Napa. And, you know, at this point, I had about like 10 years sober. And a newcomer approached me and he was like, oh, you know, I want to start a secular meeting here. And I started having like post-traumatic flashbacks, like, oh, no. Like, I mean, I told him I'd help him do it, but it was very much like, there's just all this, like, all the difficulties, the interpersonal difficulties I had with folks in AA over starting that secular meeting 10 years ago was like flooding back. And it just like, quite honestly, starting a secular meeting messed with my serenity. It really did. It really, really did. Yeah, like even back, you know, like my boyfriend came to me at one point in Monterey. He's like, hey, my sponsor needs to talk to me about you. And I was like, what? Like, why? And he's like, I don't know. And then he comes back later that night. He's like, oh, he says I need to stay away from you because you started that secular meeting. So it was just crazy that the bias, and all the rumors about what was going on at our meeting, you know, perpetuated by people who had never been to our meeting. It's like, hey, if you actually come and check out the meeting, you'll probably see that it's not such a terrible thing. So in Napa, the meeting we started, though, it went fine. It was without any issues. And I don't know if that's because it's 10 years later and AA is more inclusive, or if it's because we're in a more accepting part of California where it's less religious, or if it's quite simply because, you know, people are more likely to let someone with a decade of sobriety do things versus someone with 1 year of sobriety. It's kind of one of AA's dirty little secrets that time actually does count as much as we pretend it doesn't. And I'll stop talking. Thanks, you guys.
Thank you. Next is Kathy W. Go ahead, Kathy W.
Yeah, I'm Kathy, alcoholic. A couple things here that really resonate with me. First of all, the trying to get a secular meeting started. Nella, I understand completely what that was all about when you talked about not being in favor with an intergroup office. I actually even work in the intergroup office or volunteer there, you know, weekly. And so I know, I hear them talk with the powers to be. And I know if I want to start my secular meeting, which I would like to, I'd be out of the club, okay? And that's a bad feeling. And that's exactly what we don't want to have. I think it should be open just like we have other categories. I think a secular should be listed as a category, as an option. But anyway, and also I did start one with somebody before COVID, and we also used the big tent. And the big tent, we had the same issue. All the stories were sort of like, well, I'm going to show them you don't have to have God to, you know, wasn't about, we weren't talking about AA and recover. We were just talking about how it was like an ongoing validation of why we shouldn't be able to have secular AA, you know, and that wasn't what I was in there for. The other thing is I lived in Las Vegas in the 80s and some of the 90s. I was an entertainer there, a lounge entertainer. And let me tell you, that's a hard place to tackle sobriety, and especially in that business. I just, you know, it's almost impossible because it's so normalized. And the entertainment industry and the service industry, as Keith talked about, I'm sure it's the same way there. Everybody, it's hard to tell that you're an alcoholic. You know, you can deny it pretty easily because everybody's, you know, got that going on. But also being around alcohol six nights a week, you know, it's my job to start the party, you know, and sometimes to start the party, I felt like I needed to have some fortification. And through the years, my fortification led me to alcoholism and all the consequences that came with it much later in life. And I'm really just, I'm glad to be in AA. I was glad to find a sponsor who, even though she is religious, she was able to listen to all the stuff that I had to say, the things that I didn't like, this and that. And somehow I have found my way into regular AA meetings, as long as they don't say the Lord's Prayer. That's sort of my barometer. And I'm excited about perhaps starting a secular meeting. And yeah, I guess that's all I have to say. I want to thank also the people who put this conference on. It was absolutely amazing, and for all the speakers and shares. Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to go to Tim C. Tim C. Let me try to unmute you. I'm asking you to unmute.
There we go. Thank you so much. That was my mistake. I clicked on the wrong bar too quickly to get unmuted. I'm Tim, recovered alcoholic. I'm from San Francisco Bay Area, and I can't tell you how unbelievable it is to go sit in a meeting and have them close with the Lord's Prayer in 2023. Can we just follow, everybody agrees that the country was Judeo-Christian, 99% Judeo-Christian in 1939. And that's what they understood and knew. Bill Wilson got very interested in Buddhism in the 1960s and wanted to go to Thailand, but he couldn't get a way to go do that. So one of his friends went over there and brought Buddhism back to him. The 10th tradition says, let's stay away from sectarian religion in our homes. And I think that's an excellent idea. But I would propose this. I hear when people say it's so hard to go to these regular meetings and listen to this. And I absolutely understand. My meetings are all, my home group is a big book group. We study the big book, and I'm a big book thumper that some people think is insulting. I take great pride in it. I'm a big book enthusiast. And I think the concepts in the big book are getting missed. And so we have these conversations going to these regular meeting maker make it meetings where nobody's talking about the solution, and we have a bunch of drunks dying. Right. And we've all sat in those rooms. And I was one of those that sat in those rooms for 13 years before somebody sat me down and explained what was in the big book. And I finally understood what an alcoholic is. So we hear the same conflict. I go to those regular meetings, those general meetings, and try to carry, and maybe this will help some of the people who have spoken, I try to carry the message of what the concepts are in the big book about spirituality. And the concept of spirituality is finding our own truth. It says so in several places in the first 164 pages. My spiritual awakening was finding my own truth and letting go of the belief systems that I'd been raised with, letting go of what others had told me who I was, and finding out who I was. That is my spiritual awakening. Page 54 says, maybe that's just reality, me finding my reality and not a higher power, or finding it in my own heart. Page 55, we're going to find our own higher power. Where? In our own heart. That's where Christ said we were going to find it. That's where Buddha said we were going to find it. That's where Confucius said we were going to find it. Whatever our truth is allows me to sponsor atheists, Buddhists, Hindus, Christians of all sects, and a whole bunch of atheists, pantheist and pagan. It doesn't matter if we go back and start talking about the concepts in these meetings, what the book's really trying to teach us, which a lot of it came from William James. This spiritual awakening is an inside job, and whatever you want to call spirituality, rock and roll, buddy. We don't care. It's yours. It can be Keith sunglasses or glasses. It can be, the scarf around your face. It doesn't matter as long as that is your truth. And when we go in and talk in meetings like this, it shifts some of the conversation. So I'm just suggesting if we start talking about the concepts and start and stay out of the specific language that indicates that we're all supposed to be, there's what? 40 descriptions of the higher power in the first 164 pages of the big book, all of them capitalized. Spirit of nature, spirit of the universe, the great reality is capitalized. Power and love is capitalized as a spiritual higher power term. Man, I can rock with power and love. I couldn't rock with what I was raised with. I went to my first meeting and I thought they were going to be bleeding goats and chickens before it was over with. That's what I was introduced to. When I found out what we were really doing in this room, I had a spiritual awakening, and some people would just call that a coming to reality. And that was my spiritual awakening. So we can broaden this conversation out maybe a little bit and make it easier for everybody to come to the table with whatever belief system they want, be it atheist or not, our atheists should be in our regular rooms carrying the message to that new little guy who comes in like me, who can't stand that little God that I was raised with, right? And I need to see those folks in the room just like I need to see the gay guys in the room, because I kept myself closeted for 13 years in AA for all the obvious reasons. Now I go to the straight meetings and I don't make a big deal out of being gay, but I can mention my partner is a drunk or drinks, and I have no problem with him having alcohol in the house. Right? I don't need to make a big deal out of it, but that lets people know that our rooms have everybody there. That no matter what faith or background you come from, atheist or not, we get to share the message of recovery, and that's a spiritual awakening all in itself. That's it. That's all I got. Sorry, but I needed to get that out there. Thanks.
Thanks, Tim. I agree that, I hope that atheists and everybody else keeps going to all the rooms of AA and makes themselves known. I try to do that. And if you're a big book thumper, you'll be interested. I want you, if you can, you should come to the session I'm doing after this at the top of the hour, because we're going to challenge the big book a little bit. And so maybe you want to be there to set us straight or to share your opinion. It's this, the steps are in order for a reason session right after this one. But let's go off to Judy NC. I'm asking her to unmute.
Hi, I am Judy from NC, the beautiful mountain, North Carolina.
Nice.
And I would not have gone to AA if my therapist hadn't told me there's a secular group of AA here in Asheville, and they meet twice a week on Tuesdays and Fridays. So I went there, and in spite of being a marijuana addict, I found all the tools I need to live in this world as a sober person from secular AA. And I'm so grateful. I wish there were more secular MA, Marijuana Anonymous meetings. I've only found one, but I'm very happy to have found you guys. And I'm also a member of secular Al-Anon. And there are only 5 secular Al-Anon meetings in the world. And we are having great difficulty getting listed on our WSO, our World Service Office listing of meetings. They have a section for women, a section for men, a section for LGBTQ+, a section for people of color, a section for young people, but there's no section for secular. And it's a problem, and we are working through it. Our 5 groups are connected. We meet on 5 different nights. And anyway, I'm so grateful that the secular community in AA is strong and thriving, and it's thanks to people like you who have fought the good fight. And we appreciate you. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Judy. And, thank you for being here. Whenever anybody comes to a meeting and speaks up, they're doing something of value, I feel. So we're going to call on Lenny Z, and then that's going to be the last person, because I need to take care of some stuff and go to another session here at the top of the hour. So we're asking Lenny to unmute.
Hey, fam, Lenny, garden variety substance abuser. Thanks, everybody who's working on this conference and whatnot. I had a sponsor for 12 years, and she passed away with 55 years of sobriety in traditional AA. And she was very Catholic, but never put that on me. You know, she was also a psychologist, so I had outside help inside. She and I hung together every day, went to meetings together every day, had lunch or dinner, sometimes both together. We became one another's sister, mother, friend, confidant, whatnot. She passed away, and all of a sudden, my dirty little secret that I wasn't practicing the way everybody was telling me, I didn't have her around anymore, and I found secular AA. Well, during this conference, I thought, and I'm thinking, gosh, I'm really fortunate. My local club has 2 secular meetings. I live on the peninsula that separates Tampa Bay from the Gulf of Mexico. we have meetings from 7 in the morning till 11 o'clock at night, an abundance of meetings. At 8 o'clock, there's 15 different meetings. I can choose from 5 just within walking distance. And the 2 that are at the local club that a friend of mine retired and she used the space for her business and opened up a club that's, there's AA, NA, OA, all the A's are there. That's where the 2 seculars are. They're the only in the whole county. And here I'm thinking, hey, I got 2 just up the street. And we have so many meetings in this county. There must be an abundance. And there's not. So anyway, I'll see what I can do about that. But I still go to traditional AA. Since the pandemic, I don't go to face-to-face a whole lot. But I go to a 24/7 that I do a lot of service in. And I'm quick to go in, you know, when some girl needs a breakout room and they're new and they need something to talk about. I have this whole package of stuff that I send out with a list of secular meetings, a list of regular meetings, a little blurb that I wrote out. So that's what I can do to help newcomers know that, hey, you know, it's not about baby Jesus. It's about causes and conditions. All right. If nobody told you they love you today, you might want to think about getting some new friends. I love you. There's nothing you can do about it. Thanks, fam.
Thank you very much. Okay. I think we need to close her down. So let's do things in order of importance. The first thing I should do is thank everybody who showed up and made this an awesome meeting and who's shown up throughout the conference and supported it. Thank you very much for attending and for being here.